Welcome back, everyone, to this next episode of the podcast and my interview with Troy Hadid. I have mixed feelings about technology these days, but one of the positives for sure is that it allowed me to talk to Troy, who lives in Trinidad and Tobago. Score one for Wi-Fi. Troy is many things, right? Like every guest I've had on here, he is a multitude of things inside one human package. We talk about yoga in this episode. We talk about love. We talk about benediction and writing. But it was an experience he had, a very unexpected experience, that changed him and marked him forever. And it's still indeed a touchstone in his life to this day. I've started meditating, but have yet to try yoga. Eckhart Tolle expressed this beautiful sentiment about yoga. Inhale the future, exhale the past. And when I'm meditating, the practitioners often urge me to inhale positive energy and exhale what is troubling me, whether it's energy or a thought. So perhaps in both yoga and meditation, we can breathe in what is right for us, what is beneficial for us, and what will bless us. And thus, potentially, we can change our futures. One more yoga quotation. Yoga is not about touching your toes. It is about what you learn on the way down. And that quotation is from Jigar Gore. So with that in mind, let's get going on to my conversation with Troy Hadid.
This woman and this little girl are sitting in a lifeguard booth looking at me do yoga. Not awkward at all, right? So then finally I say, well, her mom is here. She maybe is more comfortable, confident. So I come down to sit to call them both onto my mat. And they both start coming onto my mat. So we all sit there in meditation, eyes closed. No one has said a word. And I remember opening one eye, like, just to make sure this was really happening. If I had to, in a nutshell, what I would say is I keep trying to reprogram my own conditioning and remind myself that I am not actually a human being. Right? This is my outfit. And I won't say it's easy because it's freaking hard. But we don't take things quite as personally. And then we could see everyone else's conditioning as well. But to answer your question, I would say if I had to put myself in a box or label myself, I would say I am an individual who is trying his best to remind us all what it means to love and do everything I can to connect individuals to their understanding of God and help them deepen that relationship.
I'm so curious, how did you end up living where you are today?
Oh, I was born in Trinidad.
Okay.
Sorry, I said that really fast with a Trinidadian accent. I was born in Trinidad. Sometimes you speak fast. My father's family is Arab. They're from Syria. I learned recently that they're actually from Palestine. But Palestine, Syria, so I come from that Arab lineage on my dad's side. And then on my mom's side, she comes from a more European Irish background. So, back in Trinidad's history, after slave trade and so on and colonization and all this stuff, you had all these influx of cultures and people coming to Trinidad for different reasons. You know, so I think that's how the Arabs came and Lebanese came and Europeans came after with English colonies and so on, not colonization.
Thank you for that. I was gonna ask you, did you have a sense when you were kid or a child that, you know, you were going to be heading in this direction? Did you have any idea of what was waiting for you in the future?
I no clue. I wanted to be at, I mean, I was always really close to God, and I grew up in a Catholic home. So I was always really, you know, really dialed into the teachings of Jesus or Christ, or what I now refer to as Christ consciousness, beyond the scope of religion. So I would always kind of had my eye on spirit. But as a kid, I wanted to be a professional football player. I wanted to be next Pele. And I think reggae music and Rastafari and this gentleman who's now taking over movie cinemas in North America, Bob Marley, had a great influence on my life. And I think really started to plant seeds within me that I had a responsibility. And that responsibility was to at least try to make the world a better place, you know. And my first exposure to yoga was at 14 years old, and I had no real idea that that was going to be avenue that I was going to take. But when I went to university, I told my dad, you know, if you don't want to send me, you don't have to, because I'm not going to work in a family business. So I get it. I have two older brothers. And he said, no, you're going to go to university. It doesn't matter to me. I'm paying for you for this experience, this education. I said, great. I want to major in writing and philosophy. And he said, no. He said, you're going to do business. So I graduated with a degree in business and Spanish. And I came back home. And when people would ask, what are you going to do with your life? I would say, well, I'm going to teach yoga. And they'd say, well, do you practice yoga? And I'd be like, nope. But I knew it was something within me that that clearly was calling, that I didn't really recognize was calling. So I opened Trinidad's first hemp store. I started a recycling business. I sold it. And then I opened a yoga studio. And we've reopened since COVID. And I just finished writing a book pretty much about philosophy. Look at that. 20 years later.
I'm so curious. You said you would like to be a professional footballer. What position would you play?
I used to know, when I say football, I mean soccer.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Left back. Like, I was dedicated. In my book, I tell a story, and I wasn't the most talented, but I had friends who were far more talented, but I was definitely committed. I was so dedicated. I would wake up every morning at 4 and go and train by myself in my backyard. And at 14 years old, I went with a friend of mine to a coaching program in England, in Leicester. And, you know, there was talk of trying to get a scholarship for school and all this kind of stuff. And at 14, I went to this program and realized that I could not play football. That these kids in England, wow.
I know we'll talk about this more a little bit later on, but what is your favorite yoga practice that you engage in? What's the one that really captures your heart the most?
For me, so I teach vinyasa yoga. And I practice vinyasa yoga asana every day. But when people think of vinyasa yoga, they think of something more like ashtanga, which is, in my opinion, pretty fast. I like to try and make the asana practice, make the vinyasa practice, for anyone familiar, make it pranayama. So make it breath extension, right? So that we practice in itself, becomes a moving meditation. It becomes a breathing practice, a very intentional practice. And there's a little bit of a meditation practice, but that's one thing I definitely would like to cultivate more of, is more of just a seated meditation practice, you know?
And I'm glad that you brought up the breath, because honestly, I don't think I realized until quite recently how powerful certain types of breathing can be, and how with practice, they can change your awareness, or the way you walk in the world, the way you perceive the world. And I doubt very many people actually think about breathing and think about maybe the shallow breaths we're taking all the time in our lives. But how much cultivating a breathing practice, and there are quite a few out there, can change your life.
You know, there are many breathing practices, like you said, and some of them are really transformative and really move things within people that need to move, and that's beautiful. For me, people just don't know how to breathe. And if we simply just, it doesn't have to be all these crazy practices. All we need to do is sit with the breath. Slow, smooth, extended breath. And think of it this way. It's like, I think I once heard it described like this. And so anytime I teach breathing or yoga, breath is the foundation of it for me. To be honest, I don't care about the asana. I don't care about the postures. I did a class with one of my best friends this morning, and I was in class, and she forgot a whole sequence on one side. And I was like, I don't really care. I don't care anymore. I don't care about the postures anymore. Fact was that you got us into breath. The focus, the intention was there. That's all I care about. As a teacher and a teacher of teachers, that's all I care about. And if someone forgets a sequence on one side, big whoop. But what I was getting at is this. So I once heard it described this way, and it lands for us, right? We place so much emphasis on the food we eat. Really important. We eat 3 meals a day and makes us who we are. Very important. We place so much emphasis on sleep patterns. And sleep, really freaking important, absolutely. But we can actually live a few days without sleeping, and we can live up to 30 days maybe without eating, a few weeks at least, or drinking. We breathe 23,000 times a day on average, and we cannot live more than 3 or 4 minutes without breathing. So what do we think has more impact? My mom, I grew up in a Catholic home, and my mom is very Catholic, still is. She's luckily, both my parents are still with me. I went to Catholic school. But I think from very early on, like, I don't know, I have this faint memory of walking out of confirmation. Walking out of confirmation because it just didn't make any sense. Like, I was asking questions and they would tell me things about Jesus that I was like, Jesus wouldn't do that. Jesus would not say that. He would not teach that. Like, I know Jesus and he would not do that. You know, so I did. And I would say, look, I mean, I have nothing against religion, right? Religion is a beautiful thing. But what's more beautiful is God and spirit. And, you know, I was sitting on a porch recently having a chat with my mom. And I mean, my mom's opened up her perspectives and considerations so much, right? And I said, Mom, you know, God came before religion did, right? And she paused for a moment and she thought about it. I was like, God existed before religion existed. Religion just gave God a name and a form. But God doesn't belong to religion. And I could see her sit for a moment and she's like, wow, I never thought of it like that. You know, so for me, I'm really close to God. And I believe in God is formless and nameless. And, you know, the very first chapter of my book is redefining God, because I think it's so important that we give every individual the permission to redefine and cultivate their own unique relationship to God. And, You know, I know so many people that have moved away from God or don't pray, or they'll call themselves the atheist, or just haven't nurtured that relationship. And I understand why. Like, I get it. If you look at the wrongs and misalignments historically done in the name of God, I can see why someone wants to disassociate from it. But the fact is that it would be a real shame if we allow the misalignments and wrongs of history to rob us of our relationship to divinity. Because divinity and God is the one thing that makes us the same. Without that, we get so consumed by our individual identities, and we have this programming that tells us we're separate and we're different. And I don't believe that we are.
Again, gorgeously stated. Thank you so much. I would love it. Now, you've referenced it a couple of times, but I really would like for you to describe to my listeners your book, how you came up with the premise, how you got the guts to write it, because writing a book is not easy, and it can be really scary to put yourself out there. But how did you figure out that this was something you wanted to kind of do in your life?
Yeah, it still is scary, by the way. The book's been out since October 2023. It's still scary. This is it. It's called My Name is Love. Has my face on cover, which, by the way, when I wrote and even when I finished, I was like, one thing I do not want is my face on the cover of my book. I want no images of me on the cover of my book. And a book, in a lot of ways, has become a lot of things I did not want it to be. I didn't want reflection questions. I didn't want it to have my face on the cover. I wanted pictures, and I didn't want, you know, it's evolved. It's really taken on a life of its own. But to answer your question more directly, I remember I was maybe in my early 20s when I used to go to movies a lot with my girlfriend at the time. And I remember one day we went to the movies, but popcorn goes everywhere. So I put my hand in my pocket, and I found an old kernel of popcorn. So I put it in my mouth. I was like, and I whispered, I was like, popcorn in my pocket is going to be the name of my first book. So for 3.5 years, this book was actually called Popcorn in My Pocket. And luckily, I had some really great editors, a really great editor. And I remember, you know, it's so funny. I remember when I started writing, or just finished what I thought was a finished book, it was actually first draft, like 3 years ago, first of like 20, and I thought it was done, and I thought I knew what I was talking about. I did this online course with a lady in New York called Lucinda Literary. And I remember it was like this group online course kind of training. And she was asking for names of books, and I gave her Popcorn in My Pocket. And she said, that's a terrible name. She said, that is a terrible name. And I was like, you don't know, in my head, of course. I was like, you don't know what you're talking about. That is a great name. It's so catchy. And I was so attached to the name, you know, but over a journey, you learn about the literary world and marketing and the process, and the book took on a whole life of its own. And luckily, I realized that that was the wrong name for the book. The book had so much more to it. It was Popcorn in My Pocket is fun and it's catchy, but this isn't a fun and catchy book. This is a book that excavates the human spirit, that really has someone look at their lives and contemplate how they show up, what they do, the meaning of it all, God, and seeing God everywhere and what it means to love and how we get in our way, you know? Certainly what the book is about, almost every chapter, is getting over ourselves so we can remember what it means to love, over our opinions, our ideologies, our sense of what's right and what's wrong, our desire to make everyone else wrong and everyone else judged and tell everyone else how it is or how it's supposed to be, and really look at how we get in our own way of being able to love and understanding what that is. And so it talked about identity a lot. And to make a long story short, if I identify as Troy in this body, like I've been told, while the human experience is valid, so to some extent I have to, But if I don't have a relationship with my identity as Troy and I allow that to overcome me, it gets in my way of being able to love. To truly glimpse and understand what it means to love one another. You know, there's a story by an Indian saint, and he talks about Christ, and he was asked, well, he tells his disciples, how did Christ meditate, right? He tells them, they ask him, how do we find God? And he says, well, meditate like Christ. And he tells them, well, how did Christ meditate? And his story goes that he paused for a moment before tears rolled down his face, and he said he lost himself in love. And I think for us to really understand what it means to love, we have to be in relationship to this sense of all our different layers of identity and not let them overcome us. So we have to be willing to lose that to remember what it means to love. So rightfully so, I felt like My Name is Love was such a beautiful name for your book, because if I had to identify with anything at all, it would be love and God, because everything else was temporary.
Have you ever experienced or witnessed something that you considered to be a miracle or magical or transformative in your life? Something that made you think about the world in a different way or allowed you to glimpse something in the world that you didn't know previously existed? I'd love to hear whatever story or stories you'd like to tell.
Yeah. Definitely, I have one story that really comes to mind. The book is filled with quite a few. But before I jump there, I would say that, you know, we have this thing with the word miracle, right? What is magical and miracle? And I talk about this in the book as well. It's a chapter that speaks about it. But a miracle is defined as something that cannot be explained, so must be attributed to a divine agency, right? Human experience and life on a whole, regardless of what scientist you are, even Albert Einstein said it, no matter what scientist you are, no matter what questions you answer, there's always two questions, how and why. How and why? Okay, how and why? Okay, Big Bang? All right, what was with the bang? Why did it bang? Where did the things come from to bang? How and why? So I choose to believe that while we forget it, because life becomes very mundane and routine and uncomfortable and painful, that life itself is a miracle. And that if we really just stop and look around and ask the right questions and listen to the right answers, that we recognize that miracles are all around us, everywhere. So that's my take on miracles. But sometimes we forget. And, you know, we were having a chat before, and I have no problem being really open and vulnerable. Yesterday, I forgot. Yesterday for me was a tough day, and I forgot. And I had to remember this very same story that I'm going to tell you now. And it's about when a relationship of mine ended with a very dear friend. We dated for about 3.5 years. This story is also in the book, not to plug in the book, but it's like. And I was heartbroken. I was really heartbroken. And there was a day when I just had enough. Not like I was going to take my life or anything. I was just done. I was done with life. So I jumped in my car. I drove to this little cove beach called Macquarie. And I was going to do a sunset yoga practice at the seaside, take a swim, and try whatever I could do to wash things off a little bit. And, you know, when I walked down the stairs onto this pebbly beach, and there was this two ladies talking with a little girl. And one of the ladies I recognized, she was local, long dreadlocks. And the other lady and little girl, I assumed were tourists because they just didn't look local. Sure, we have light-skinned locals, but they just didn't look local. So I went in the, I waved and I said hi and I tried my best to smile. I was really super down. And I went in the lifeguard hut and I began to practice. And I put on some Krishna Das, I put on my mat, and this lifeguard booth maybe it's about 10 feet square, right? So my yoga mat is 6 feet, so it's kind of tight, right? So I'm practicing, and maybe about 10 minutes in, for anyone familiar, I come into like upward facing dog, right? With pressing through my hands, my chest lifted. And in front of me stood this little girl out of nowhere, same little girl. And she had the bluest eyes ever. And this story could be really long, but I'm going to try not to drag it on too long. So I went back to my practice, and because I wasn't sure what was happening, right? But she didn't seem startled, so I wasn't startled. And I went back to my practice, continued practicing to down with whatever. And she just started walking around me in circles. In circles and circles and circles. And then she finally took a seat in the corner of the lifeguard hut, like so literally like 3 feet off my mat. And she just sat there and she looked at me practice yoga. And I came down and I invited her to come and sit with me, and she didn't budge. So I said, okay, I went back to my practice. Then sometime later, maybe another 10 minutes, whatever, I heard his footsteps coming, and it's a mom. And she signals her mom to come and sit beside her. So now this woman and this little girl are sitting in the lifeguard booth looking at me do yoga. Not awkward at all, right? So so then finally I say, well, her mom is here. She maybe is more comfortable, confident. So I come down to sit to call them both onto my mat. And they both start coming onto my mat. So we all sit there in meditation. Eyes closed, no one had said a word. And I remember opening one eye, like just to make sure this was really happening. And maybe another 10 minutes or however long, her mom said something in French eventually after sitting there for some time. And I imagine it was like, it's time to go. That's the energy I got from whatever she said. So they get up, they wave goodbye, and they walk out the lifeguard booth. And the lifeguard booth has two flights of stairs, right? So I'm in back in downward dog now. I go back to my practice, and I could actually see them walking downstairs. And as they hit the sand at the bottom of the second flight of stairs, the little girl pulls her hand out of her mom's hand, and she walks back up the staircase. And I'm in downward dog, and I see her coming, and I'm like, what's going on? And next thing I know, she disappears around the flight of stairs for a moment. And next thing I know, there are these 2 feet standing underneath me. And she puts one hand on my back, my lower back, and she just leans over and she gives me a kiss right on my ribcage. And then she leaves. She walks away. And just so people who are on the video, just so I made sure I would never doubt that experience, I had it tattooed, a symbol of that tattooed on the side of my ribcage, because I knew that I would doubt that that had ever happened. Well, I had to make sure that I never forgot how that went down. More importantly, how it made me feel. Because to me, that little girl was an angel. And whatever directed her to do what she did that day, that was God kind of putting his hand on my back and saying, yo, I got you. Like, I know it's really uncomfortable right now. This is all part of it. But I got you. It's going to be okay.
Wow, that story, that's just kind of astonishing and so beautiful. And I was just thinking, I mean, here you are, you know, in this practice, you think they're leaving, they're gone, they're down the 2 flights of stairs. And then of her own choice, she comes back up those stairs and she gives you this kind of bent, like a benediction or some sort of blessing. And I just, I don't know, kids are so much smarter and more profound that I think we give them credit for. But what a gift for your heart. Wow.
I mean, you're talking now, it's 15 years ago and or just about. And I knew I did not put that on my ribcage and tell that story over and over that I would doubt it. I would doubt it ever happened and imagine like I imagined it. And funny enough, that a local lady I saw with them. A few years after, she came to a full moon practice I did that I led. And I remember she was keen to talk to me after, and I didn't know her name at the time. But I was like, I told her, I said, you remember that day I saw you in Macquarie, Pitsy Beach? And she's like, yeah, some years back. I was like, yeah, you were with a little girl. She's like, yeah, Anika. I was like, Anika? She's like, yeah, her name's Anika. She was named after me. And I'm not too sure if I told her the story of what that little girl happened with that little girl, if she's aware of it or not. But, in one of my books to come, there's going to be a beautiful story of this little girl, Anika. And maybe in real life, I get to meet her one day, 15 years later.
Beautiful. I was just thinking to myself, I'm so glad you got it tattooed on your body because, you know, obviously I think we can both agree that this life is hard and is challenging and painful and full of encounters that we probably would rather not have. And it's hard sometimes with the suffering that's going on in the world to remember the beauty, to remember these moments that we have with other people and keep them close to our hearts so that we can, you know, kind of have these experiences that are less than ideal, that are full of suffering, but always, always operate from that place where there's a reminder that, oh, you know what? I had this experience. This little girl gave me this gift. And I think it's the tattoo. It's just, it reminds you of this blessing that you got. And I think probably helps you be more resilient in the world. Would you agree?
Yeah, 100. It, even yesterday I had to remember that because it was like, yo, Troy, get your head out. Get your head out your ass. You'll be okay. Just feel it. Important to feel it. Process it. Yes, there are always ways in which you could have done and said something differently. And if in that moment with what you were navigating, you were able to, you would have. But you couldn't at that time. Now that I've removed myself, maybe, or I look at the situation, I could say, okay, I should have X, Y, and Z. But in that moment, with the emotions and weight and everything else I was navigating, sometimes, you know, there's a beautiful saying that I believe, I don't remember what author did it, said it, Hay House. But if someone knows better, they'll do better. But here's the thing. If someone knows better, they will do better if they can in that moment. Sometimes we know better. But because we're navigating all these different things in that moment, all these fields, all these triggers, all these stuff coming at us, we're all carrying a weight and we're not always able to do what we know we should do, but to respond to life in ways that we know we should have, you know?
And I also think what's gorgeous about you saying that and just sharing what happened yesterday is that it's a really good reminder for all of us to be gentle with ourselves and for us to know that sometimes we're going to fail. Sometimes we're not going to hit the mark. Sometimes we're going to be human and that it's going to be okay, that we're going to be okay.
Yeah. And that, funny enough, I mentioned this to you, I think maybe we were recording then or not, but I have come to 100% belief. Let me explain it like this, right? I believe that all of us are in some kind of school. This is some kind of spiritual school of learning, growth, and transformation. Yes, there's joy and there's laughter and there's fun and there's good times, but that's not all it's about. It's also about work we've come here to do, right? That's the only way I can make sense of the world we live in, right? Make it more palatable, digestible to me. And that means that doing your work is sometimes uncomfortable. And I imagine that each one of us, we have a curriculum to walk. Every one of us, like textbooks and a curriculum to walk. Now get this, I am part of your curriculum and you are part of mine. You know, so I said to you earlier, I said, I believe that our mistakes and shortcomings are part of God's brilliance. Because there are times when we know better, but we're not able to do better. And in those times, we might be creating a curriculum for someone else to learn compassion, to learn empathy, to learn forgiveness. Sometimes people aren't always, a lot of time people don't learn by being told, right? They learn by feeling, by emotion. And sometimes if they can see someone else fall and witness someone else's emotions and struggle, that for them is a learning in so many ways. I might learn how to have to look at shame and guilt and my humanness and accept that, where someone else might have to look at their relationship to forgiveness, empathy, compassion.
I love that. So we're basically all in school together.
Yeah, that's right.
I often tell people on the podcast that if I had my way, I would be in school for the rest of my life because I love learning. So now you've kind of comforted me because I understand that I'm already in school. I just didn't realize it. So
yeah. Well, here's the other thing, the other analogy I use is that, you know, we will go to gym and we'll go to gym and get our ass kicked to get physically strong, right? And there are times when we're like, no, and we kick and we scream. Well, our emotional, mental, spiritual growth, how is that any different? How is that any different? There are going to be times when we're going to have to feel things that are really uncomfortable. And that's just part of what makes us evolve, you know, emotionally, mentally, spiritually. Teaches us to love.
Those moments are when I like to act like a kid and find a rock and kick it. That always makes me feel better.
Well, that's better than picking it up and throwing it at someone's head, right?
True story. Yeah, true story. Yeah.
I wanted to share a little science with you as we wrap up this episode of The Pod, and it's about kindness and what science has discovered with kindness. So this is from SSMHealth.com. Physiologically, kindness can positively change your brain. Being kind boosts serotonin and dopamine, which are neurotransmitters in the brain that give you feelings of satisfaction and well-being and cause a pleasure reward centers in your brain to light up. Quote, what studies have shown is that when we are either thinking about kind acts or witnessing kind acts or engaging in acts of kindness to other people, there are several biochemical changes that happen in our brain, unquote. And that quotation is from Dr. Bawani Balamudi. He is a child psychiatrist. And I just was thinking about the story that Troy was telling this week, and I was thinking, how very kind and lovely it was that child and her mother sat with Troy, engaged in the practice with Troy, and then the child returned to give this benediction. And they both kind of appeared in this moment where Troy needed reassurance and he needed some affirmation that he wasn't alone in this world and that the world had his back. But irrespective of that, is being kind good for you? Yes, absolutely. So this week or every day, find someone to be kind to, or be kind to yourself. I mean, we all do need to start with the self. Thanks so much for listening to the pod, and please remember to share it with those you love, or maybe someone that you barely know, or really just everyone. I'm so very grateful to those who listen and grateful for all the positive feedback I get. But still, sharing is caring, and the more people that listen, hopefully the shinier this world will become. Thank you for listening, and here's my one request. Be like Troy. Where have you had kindness or caring given to you? Where has someone given you something beautiful that touches your soul? Be like Troy and remember it. Engrave it upon your heart. And use that memory when life is hard, when life is challenging. So be like Troy and use that memory to remember that life is good, life is abundant, and life is a gift. See you so very soon for the next episode of the pod. And until then, I hope your days are filled with beauty, with laughter, and with kindness.